What did the Buddha say was the cause of suffering?
Attachment is not the cause of our suffering. Attachment is caused by ignorance. And why? What is it? What ignorance? What is it that we're ignorant of that causes us to get attached? There's something, yes, yeah. Or what is it that we're ignorant of that when we aren't ignorant of it, our suffering comes to end? No, letting go is what we got to do. Well, not knowing, that's ignorance, isn't it? Huh? Well, I suppose we're ignorant of being, yes. Yes. We can't see what this is. Because we can't see what this is, we get into a terrible muddle with it. We end up getting in all sorts of suffering that we wouldn't get in. If we saw what life is, you wouldn't be suffering. Sorry? Yeah. Of course, at one level, at a mundane level, it's like I'm ignorant of, I don't pay attention to the fact that this is all impermanent. What do I think I'm doing trying to hang on to it and get attached to it? And of course, why am I still angry about the fact that somebody sort of said something impolite to me yesterday? Well, what's that then? Why does that happen? Pride. Kind of. What is it that is the real ignorance? Yes, that this idea of me that I'm so intoxicated with, I completely dreamed up. And this comparing myself to others, is better same or worse in my experience to how I think it should be, and others to how I think they should be, and all of the stuff that's rooted in this fixation with this idea of me in the middle of my experience, and it's all so personal, that's the ignorance. The ignorance is the I. Or the I-making extravaganza is the tangled knot of suffering that we tie ourselves up in. Now, it's all very well for me to sit here and rather tritely suggest that this me is an illusion, when that's not what you're experiencing at all, is it? You're experiencing yourself right bang in the middle of your every moment. So what's going on? What is this? What is this story about this me, this I, this self, as the cause of my suffering? You know, what are we talking about? Yeah, but that is what we're talking about. That's the self. But how can it be that this self, this I maker, is the root of my suffering? What am I mean? What is it? And you say, yes, the ego is the root of the suffering. And then what do you do? What are you going to do about it? Because I'm sure you can't quite just park it up somewhere and leave it behind, can you? Yeah? It's not about the fact that you have to convince yourself that the eye maker is the cause of your suffering. It's you have to have an experience that is free from suffering and then see what that is to convince yourself that this fixation with myself is the root of my suffering. It's no good logically making sense of it. I don't think you're going to. And you're not going to convince yourself to let go just through logically telling yourself that the I maker, the ego, this idea of me, is the cause of my suffering. What you have to do is have an experience that is free of that suffering and see why it is free of that suffering. Now, I said somewhere along the line today, the Buddha teaches us
or explains to us or points out what we call the momentary cessation of suffering and the causal cessation of suffering. Now, the momentary cessation of suffering, that is an experience we can have. And then when we have it, we can look at it and go, why? And what's it made of? And why is it free of suffering? And this is why we have to learn to concentrate. What happens when you get absorbed in what you're doing? Have you ever been really concentrated on what you're doing? Totally? Talk to me about the flavor of that experience. Okay, you lose track of time. What else? Yes. There's absolutely no sense of you in the middle of the experience. It's gone. You're so absorbed in what you're doing that the I maker, the storyline, the me in the middle of it, is vanishes. And something feels so complete about that experience. We don't really understand it until it's pointed out to us. But maybe when it starts to happen to us often enough, that only when I get fully absorbed in what I'm doing, rather than stand off watching myself do it, do I feel complete within the experience? Or does the experience feel complete? When you are concentrated, totally concentrated, the flavor of the serenity that comes on and the feeling of unification that is born of that experience, the single flavor of it is the total absence of the sense of me in the middle of it. And yet, in our ordinary moment, we spend almost all our time, Dana, in one way or another, before, during, or after the event, an idea of me that I think is going to make the whole thing meaningful. When all it does is create a sense of separation and a sense of isolation. Here I am having this experience. And what I long for is a feeling of connection, which I never have, because I'm so busy adding me, this sense with me, or the idea of me to the experience, that it's always something in here experiencing something out there. Now, the first time we have to... Maybe not. But the first time we probably have an experience where that fades is when we got completely absorbed in something that we were doing. I don't know what it was, whether you were playing a piano or playing in a piece of dirt when you were a kid, or just absorbed in what you're doing to the point where you're so totally in it that the sense of you has faded. And the constant diatribe and the nonsense and the storytelling and the comparing it and thinking about whether it's good enough and how can I make it better and what do I need to add and what's missing is gone. And that's the closest you get to a complete experience. And you don't necessarily understand why it felt so amazing. I just know that I really love it when I'm ... And in a moment, there is no affliction. And the very moment that you turn up after that and go, wow, that was awesome, and you start scrabbling around with your mind trying to sort of attach to it in some way or replicate it and go, oh, how can I have that experience back or whatever, so you experience misery all over again. The attempt to own, cling, attach to, make mine that very experience in which I was completely absent. So, it's the arising of the sense of me in the middle of the experience that creates the sense of separation between me and the experience that I'm having. The fading of the sense of me in the experience ends that sense of separation, which is why total state of concentration or absorption or what we call samadhi, we talk about as the unification of the knower, the knowing and the known. It's a single thing I guess at that point you can stop trying to describe it. But the point, the flavor, that every time we have this experience, the single flavor is of nothing lacking. Of nothing lacking. It doesn't matter what it is we were doing. Every time it happens, there is nothing lacking. Whether you are sitting there and you just, I don't know, enter totally into concentration on your thumbnail, or some kind of unification with some great divine being,
It doesn't really matter. There is absolutely nothing to add that could make that experience more complete. And emerging from that, you have known the cessation of suffering. The cessation of suffering is the feeling that this, I'm afflicted by the sense that I lack something, this isn't enough. At some level, I'm disturbed by my experience because I don't like it or because I want more than I'm getting. Now, how do we get to the point of disinvesting in this idea of myself? Well, you can get tired and bored of it. Yeah, of all the sort of nonsense and the knots you tie yourself in and the trouble you get yourself into, but you're still not wholly convinced to give it up. And you'll still carry on tying yourself in knots and getting yourself in a muddle. It's not until you have a flavour, a taste of freedom from that, that you really get, yeah, you know what? What a relief! Now, that experience first comes to us. There are two moments. Two ways in which that comes. One is in a state of total concentration, and one is in a moment of complete awareness. In both of those experiences, the experience does not disturb the heart base enough to prompt the unconscious to arise and apprehend it. Ayipawanga stops. Now, it takes a lot more meditative shall we say, accomplishment to watch the mechanism by which this sense of me arises. But the mechanism by which it stops, we can experience. And we experience under two circumstances. So there's the moment of being completely absorbed, where because we're so concentrated, we come to such a state of serenity that the heart base isn't disturbed. And it's the throwing of the pebble in the pond that shakes the heart base, that prompts the arising of this unconscious massive stock that creates the sense of me in the middle of it. Yeah? So, here are the experiences that you're having moment to moment, all right? A, B, and C. I don't know what it is, these various things that you might be doing. And having it in the moment that you experience A and react to it, that impulse vibrates the heart base. And now you have an impression A in your heart base. Yeah, in this consciousness that we call Bawanga, which is the consciousness that rests in your heart. So this word Bawanga means life continuum. That's how it translates, but it's the mechanism by which the knowing of this object feels connected to the knowing of that object, when actually they're two completely discrete and not connected events. So registering whatever this experience is, that contact feeling, perception that I just explained, that's a single mind moment. And the feeling associated with it produces a reaction to A, that is the stone thrown in the pond. Yes? Your pond has a charge associated with that experience. Then you experience the next object, the next thing, whatever it is, whatever the experience is, you react to it. And in that registers at the heart base with the impulse. And now Bawanga has A plus B as a charge. Yeah, understand? And then you experience C, and now Bawanga has A plus B plus C as a charge. And then somewhere down the line of this A, B, C, D, all these things you experience, and then along comes a very similar experience to A. It's not the same thing, it's not the same mind moment, but the feeling associated with it, because I've already experienced it before. Now, that's that. As your awareness registers A, it reacts again to A
because that's how it reacted last time, and now you've got 2A's plus B plus C, etc. This is the way that we accumulate this charge of impressions in our what becomes our unconscious or our memory. Now, it is the arising of this Bhavanga consciousness in between each moment of what we're experiencing that creates the sense of me, the experiencer. Yeah? Because this is what's contains that compound stock of everything that you've ever experienced. And it gives the sense of continuity. It gives the sense that it's the same person experiencing it, you know, over time. Except for the fact that Bhavanga itself is vibrating with all kinds of different things that might be surfacing from underneath, to the fact that one day you wake up feeling like a train wreck, and another day you wake up feeling quite peaceful. And you tell yourself it's the same person, but there's very little about that person that feels the same. Yeah? But there are still, because of the massive stock of charge that is continuously arising in the background, even though I feel so dramatically different one day to the next, there's still a sense that it's me that's constantly present within the experience. But the point is, this Bhavanga, in the same way that this is a conditionally arising momentary experience, this appearance of this Bhavanga consciousness is a conditionally arising momentary experience. It's not inherently there. It only arises when something disturbs the heart base and prompts it to arise. Now, one day you get so concentrated that you land so delicately upon the experience, or you're so absorbed in the experience that you are having, that the experience does not disturb your heart base. And in that moment, so if we talk about it in meditative terms, your ordinary concentration would be a series of moments in which you take the same object, your thumb or whatever, and because it's an object that doesn't have a particularly strong charge associated with it, it's a relatively neutral feeling that's registering at the heart base, not disturbing it much, makes you calm, you apprehend your object a little bit more calmly. As you continue to concentrate, your heart base becomes less disturbed, but still Bhavanga's arising. You're concentrated, you're taking the same object, but it's disturbing you minimally, but still Bhavanga is arising. There's still the sense of me concentrating on my thumb. And then one day you get so concentrated that your mind, that experience registers so delicately in the heart base that the heart base isn't disturbed at all. And then what happens is the mind now takes the object or awareness, this object arises in awareness so delicately that it doesn't disturb Bhavanga at all. And because it doesn't disturb Bhavanga, Bhavanga stops arising. And now all you are experiencing, and it's not even you experiencing it, it's awareness, is an absorption or unification with the experience that you're having. It doesn't matter what it is, the fact that I'm concentrating on my thumbnail, or who knows what it could be. In that moment, you experience an extraordinary sense of peace, a total sense of unification, a total sense of absence of any sense of separation or isolation, and a total lack of any sense that something is missing. And you're not doing anything in the slightest bit interesting. An ordinary experience becomes a complete experience. And it's only in the aftermath, when you emerge from it, something, you know, you waver in some way, your concentration wavers, and that experience registers in Bhavanga, and the sense of me appears again, and wow, you know that you just had an experience that surpassed your ordinary experience.
And when you start to have that experience often enough, you start to recognize it. You start to be able to review it. And you go, what on earth is it about that experience that makes it so extraordinary? And then gradually you start to recognize, well, this is what's extraordinary, is the fact that this is gone. The eye maker, the me, at the center of it. There's no trace of it. And that profoundly changes you. In fact, they call this in Abhidharma terminology, the moment that you enter into a proper state of samadhi, they call a change of lineage. Because it profoundly changes your relationship with yourself to the fact that you are no longer convinced to apply the energy that you've been applying towards the gratification or the completion or the satisfaction of your own personal needs, because you know this is only when they're dropped away that I actually feel complete. So it creates a shift, a change. It's called the momentary cessation of suffering. And through hindsight, we come to recognize that the reason it is the cessation of suffering is because the sense of me fades. Now that's with regards to concentration. Now there is another moment in which Bhavanga stops arising. And that's when you just come to a state of rest within the experience, to the point where you don't disturb the experience at all. You leave the experience completely alone. And you're not concentrated on it. You're just utterly immersed in it. And the moment you try and look into the experience, the eye maker appears and it's gone. But when you stop and rest in the experience itself and leave it utterly alone, it's not concentration, but equanimity that stops disturbing Bhavanga. And even though everything remains, the sense of me at the center of it has gone. Until you look, and then there it is again. Now that's what we call the non-dual experience of pure awareness. You're not concentrated, but the Bhavanga has momentarily stopped to rise, and you are totally immersed in the experience. But the eye maker, the me, is gone. And I can look around this room and I can see how many of you are watching yourselves from yourself. And I can see which one of you spotted awareness. There's nothing to add. The moment you add, your eye maker arises. And with it, a sense of separation from the experience. The moment you leave the experience totally alone and add nothing, and though everything is still present and still in motion, there is a stillness, utter stillness that rests in the background that is undisturbed. And that is the second experience in which you experience this momentary cessation of suffering. And I was just sitting there quietly. I don't know how many of you spotted that just now. But in that moment, everything drops away. And there's nothing lacking. There's nothing. What could you add to that experience? There's nothing to add. And it was an ordinary experience sitting in a room full of folk you don't know very well, in a strange house, in the middle of Wales, doing nothing that even mildly interests you. The moment you leave your experience alone enough, you stop disturbing yourself and the experience, Bhavanga stops arising, and the sense of you in the middle of the experience is gone. Of course, if you look into the experience, it's there again, you smother it, and there's me,
So it's a bit delicate. But if and when we have that experience, we just stop in awareness and stop adding our mind to it, we also experience the momentary cessation of suffering. And it, likewise, regardless of what we were concentrating on, regardless of what was happening or where we were, that moment lacks nothing. And there's no sense of needing to add or take from it. And a total sense of rest comes upon your heart. And through these experiences, we start to recognize that I violate the very experience I'm having by adding this sense of me to it the whole time. And it's so you've got the flavor of being afflicted by the suffering. Oh, I can't bear my craving and aversion anymore. I can't bear not having what I want and getting what I don't want. So you've got all that suffering pushing you from behind, but once you start to taste the simplicity and completeness of that moment when you're not there, now something pulls you. What was I thinking? Imposing myself every moment, nothing but a nuisance to myself and everybody around me. This great big idea of me that I spent my entire life creating was the very root of my suffering. So we start to have the experience, the actual experience of the cause of our suffering. Now, you know, having it pointed out like that maybe helps to a degree. But when you actually start to have that experience consistently enough, you will very quickly gain conviction that disinvesting in the I-making extravaganza is the way out of suffering, rather than how can I invest in the way that's going to make me feel complete. And the extraordinary thing about it is that this how can I invest in this I-making extravaganza in such a way that makes me feel complete is the very reason we've consumed absolutely everything we could possibly get our hands on, because we were never satisfied. It never satisfied, no matter how exquisite the experience you're able to get your hands on. The fact that you violate it with the sense of me in the middle of it leaves you with the sense that there's still something lacking. And off we go in search of the next thing until there's nothing left. Till it's all gone. And then we go, wow, oof, now what? Now what are we going to do? So you either chase your tail, looking for that peak experience until you just bang your head against the wall and say, I'm absolutely exhausted, or you realize at some moment this has got to stop. And you tire of it, and you start to disinvest in this I-making extravaganza on account of that, or somehow, through your meditative experience, or through whatever, just, I don't know what, you have an experience that takes you into a place that is beyond yourself, that you know is, you can, experience is so far surpasses those rather pitiful experiences I was trying to make complete by adding myself to. And then you feel, oh, really, truly, letting go is the path out of suffering. And now you've had the flavor, the momentary flavor, the momentary cessation of suffering, and you look into it and you say, it's the eye maker that is my suffering. The causal cessation of suffering is the point where the eye maker stops arising. I lose sense of myself in the experience because I'm so immersed in the experience. And that happens in phases, as your ability to engage your experience rises and your need to add to the experience diminishes. Until such time one day, and this is kind of stepping ahead a little bit, but one day in your meditation, whilst you're watching that very experience that we've just described come and go and come and go, and you're seeing how impermanent it is, whilst watching it pass away and go, this is just impermanent. Yeah, I can let go. And you let go and you start letting go, and then one day you let go so completely that your mind passes through the arising and passing of things and comes to rest upon the ground where it's not arising and passing. Or what we call the unconditioned state, where all of this has come to cessation and you know it. And that experience of the non-arising of all this conditioned stuff that I'm trying to hold on to but I can't hold on to cuts off your obsession with trying to hold on to, cling to, make mine these fleeting, conditioned, momentary, transient experiences that I've got myself in such a knot trying to hold on to. And emerging from that experience, there it is, it's still there. But it doesn't stick anymore. And because it doesn't stick anymore, now you can be with it. And in the being with it, without needing to add or take from it, the eye-maker fades at a quantum level. And now you experience what's called the causal cessation of suffering, because there's no impulse remaining in you to want to smother the experience by grasping at it and making it mine, or hanging on to it from one moment into the next. And that's the process of awakening out of suffering, freeing ourselves of suffering. So the seeing what this is, that it is this transient arising and passing process that is utterly conditioned. When you see the what we call dependent origination, when you see the causal process by which things come into being, or the creative process that brings things into being, once you've seen it, there isn't anything you will look at and go, I can't understand why that's like that. You'll look at it and go, of course. So your sense that everything is broken, or the sense that it's flawed, or out of place, or it will be gone. Because you'll see that everywhere, everything you look at is a perfect reflection of the causes for its coming into being. And that it is not possible for it to be other than the way it is. And that it is always going to be the way it is. And so what you started, or got used to starting to see or assume was something that was fundamentally broken or flawed or suffering, innately suffering, you see is actually innately perfect. You see that there isn't a hair out of place and it isn't possible for there to be one. That everything is a perfect reflection. And the conflict is the fact that we haven't learned to be with it. And that's our suffering. When you see it for what it is, you see it as perfection. When you don't see it for what it is, you see it as misery. And so the ignorance, ultimately, isn't just the fixation with the idea of me at the center. It's the not seeing what the whole thing is. That it is this remarkable display in its infinite variety, displaying itself with pure creativity in the most unimaginable ways, everywhere. And everywhere you look, no matter how extraordinary it is, you'll see, of course, it's like that. Whether it's the greatest state of despair and misery or the most exalted divine display you could possibly imagine, You will see for yourself that nothing can appear without a cause for it to appear. And everything that appears is a perfect reflection of that cause. And now there's no part of you that is in conflict with how things are. And you don't even need a willingness to be with things, because there's no part of you that is unable to be with things. You should just see always and everywhere, that it is what it is, and that it's in its extraordinary way, it's perfect. So our suffering is our conflict, our inability to be with the way things are, the fact that we want it to be something else, and the way we interfere with it to make it that, is what turns it into suffering. There is nothing in nature that is in conflict. It displays itself perfectly, always and everywhere. There's nothing that came into being on this planet in the billions of years that life has been here that disturbed in any way the ground that it came from or failed to return to that ground without leaving no trace or no... Or depleting in any way the ground that it came from. You understand? It was, goes on for billions of years. It's an extraordinary display, unfathomable creativity. We, in our fixation with ourselves, develop this amazing capacity to become the creator. And so fixated with our own creations are we, that we lose our connection to the creative process that is actually governing our life, and in so doing become intoxicated with our creations and consume the very ground that we stand upon. Well, you didn't come here to be the creator. You came here to witness what this is. And when you see it, each one of you, every single one of you, when you see what this is and you see it at work and how it works, you will say to yourself, wow. And you'll say, you'll know, truly, what I came here to do, I've done. What I came here to see, I've seen. And there you go. And this massive suffering that we tie ourselves up in is because we are longing for something that we don't know what it is. We're in search of something, we've got no idea what it is. We don't know how to find it, we don't know where to look, but we know that something's lacking. And so in our desperate attempts, in our sort of mundane, muddled kind of way to create something that's going to complete me, we lose our connection to that very creative, pure intelligence that we are simply an expression. And then you realize that everything you behold everywhere is a display of a single process, which everywhere and always displays itself perfectly. And you are a perfect reflection of the way that you have interfered with that process. And I am a perfect reflection of the way that I have interfered with that process. And there it is. And then one day you choose to stop interfering. And there it is. The end of your suffering. So, there we go, my friends. And it's, you know, this is Dhamma. This is the mechanics. This is the architecture of consciousness. This is not some philosophy that you might subscribe to. If you watch the experience that you're having and have always been having, you will see what I've just described you at work in every single moment. Life is Dhamma. And you've been living it since your first breath. You only have to learn to pay enough attention. Which is why the Buddha says, it is not seeing what this is that is the cause of our suffering. Seeing it for what it is the cessation of our suffering. A choiceless process. And that's it. So we meditate for the momentary enjoyment, but over time we meditate so that we can gradually learn to pay more and more attention to the experience that I'm having right now. And in that very moment, in that experience that you're having right now, every single moment you will see the truth at work. And when you see it, the seeing of it will free you of your suffering. That's it. You see or you don't see. Ignorant, not seeing is the cause of our suffering. All this attachment, craving, clinging, aversion, all the frustration, worry, jealousy, pride, avarice, all this nonsense. All of it arises in a mind that doesn't see, that thinks it needs to add something to the experience it's having to make it complete, that feels it needs to take something out of the experience it's having to make it complete. There is nothing to add, my friends. By all means. But make sure it's just a dance. Don't take it too seriously and don't get lost in the idea that it matters. Because it doesn't. There is nothing you are going to contribute to this planet that matters a jot. Soon after you pass away, everything, everyone that's here will have forgotten you were ever here. Get over the idea that you're important. That's going to help you a lot because then you'll be able to dance. So by all means, whatever it is you choose to do, but don't make too much of a nuisance of yourself in the doing of it. And don't think that anybody cares. Because they don't. All right. What do they say? God is a divine comedian playing to an audience that's afraid to laugh. Don't take yourselves too seriously.